Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Pablo De Castro. I represent the defendant appellant, Efren Garcia Oliveros.
Why did your client submit an affidavit with a first-hand statement attached to the position paper that was filed with the court?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor. What an affidavit with respect to what set of facts?
With respect to everything that, you know, you offered.
Well, Your Honor, he'd already made statements to law enforcement that were presented in the government's case in chief. I was merely clarifying those statements in the defense argument and putting them in context of time. There was a dispute whether he had returned to this country for criminal purposes or not, and I was pointing out that he had made a statement which had been recognized by law enforcement and the probation department in his PSR, that criminal activity occurred prior to his departure, that the gun that was found at his house had been stashed in his house before he had departed the United States and before he had come back illegally, that he did not come back illegally with the criminal purpose to possess firearms or otherwise create a danger in this country. So that there was a question as to timing. There was a question whether or not some criminal activity after his return aggravated his crime. I don't think there was a question that he had already made his statement. I didn't think of it as a question of fact because it was a fact stipulated and agreed by the parties and, in fact, presented by the other party. So, Your Honor, the question here is not really whether or not the district court ultimately imposed an appropriate sentence. The sentence was within the guidelines. It is certainly within the court's discretion to do that. The question is whether the record is sufficient to decide whether or not the court adequately used its discretion in this case, whether it just listened to both sides, whether it considered the reasoned arguments of both sides and the facts presented, and whether it exercised its lawful discretion.
So what would you, if you got the second chance that you are asking for to go back to the district court, if we were to say, you know, we need more than you gave us on the theory that she gave us essentially nothing, what would you emphasize and what reason is there to think that the final sentence might actually change?
Well, Your Honor, I can't say whether the final sentence might change. In fact, I advised my client that it might change up as well as down. The district court gave no indication that it considered whether or not this guideline was appropriate to apply in this case.
Position is sort of as a matter of law, even if there's some discussion during the sentencing hearing of the 3553A factors, there has to come a moment when the judge at least says, you know, I haven't heard anything but stock arguments, and so I'm going to go ahead and use a guideline sentence or whatever. The judge has got to give something.
At a minimum, Your Honor, we have to remember there are two purposes that Johnson and Slipher emphasize for the reason to require an adequate record. It's not just to allow for the meaningful review that I'm concerned with. It's also to promote the perception of fair sentencing. If a defendant stands up before the district court and gives an argument, gives evidence, presents letters in support of the defendant, and the district court, without any comment whatsoever, simply says, I'm going to give you the bottom of the guidelines, and that's that. It's exactly the behavior that Cunningham criticized. It's exactly the behavior that all of these cases criticized.
Do you think your strongest point was? I mean, one of the things that Cunningham says is you don't have to talk about everything, but you do have to give some indication about the points that are emphasized.
Yes, Your Honor, and with respect to the points in particular, the argument about the 16-level enhancement, this is an argument that has really gained a lot of traction across the country. Courts all over the country are questioning the providence of this guideline. It is legitimate to ask whether it is reasonable to apply it in a given case. I understand that this court has indicated that a district court need not address arguments attacking it per se, but given how much and how many courts have questioned it and how many experts have weighed in against it, it is reasonable to ask in each and every case whether it's reasonable to apply the full extent of the 16-level enhancement in every given case. I can tell this court I have other cases pending in the district court where I'm confident this argument would come against me, where the defendant clearly is the type of person that the guideline is intended for. But I would still argue that the court should look at each and every case, just as Booker says, look at each and every case and decide whether or not the guidelines reasonably apply to the given set of circumstances. And if in the end the decision is that it does, well, first of all, I don't agree that it would.
Well, but your basic point, though, is that for this particular person, the sentence that one comes up with using the 16-level enhancement is too harsh.
Yes, Your Honor. This particular person who comes back to this country to work for his family when his father takes ill and engages in no criminal behavior after his return is followed.
Well,
and
other than this gun. I mean, you know, well, the government contests that.
The gun was stashed in the house and forgotten before he left. So he was observed and under surveillance by agents for a month. And in that month, there was nothing to arrest, nothing to stop him for or question him for. All he did was walk 30 miles to work, or 30 minutes to work every day and back. He went to work, he came home. That's all they ever saw him do. This is not somebody who deserves a guideline sentence that is equivalent to some of the ones that I cited in my brief, such as arson by use of explosives at an airport, armed robbery with dangerous weapon resulting in serious bodily harm. These are clearly more serious offenses, and they come to the same guideline level. And there is something wrong with that, Your Honor. I would argue vehemently, and if I get back to the district court, I will try to convince the district court that that's not right. I think that as far as getting back to the district court, it's important to point out the government has conceded that the record is not sufficient. The government has conceded that these, although the government believes that these are reasonable, there are reasonable arguments on both sides, they have conceded that there was insufficient discussion of these arguments in the district court. With that, Your Honor, I reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning.
You know, there is something inexplicable about this case. The government's concession has me scratching my head, I'll tell you. Did you mean to concede that the record was insufficient to clearly establish that the district court meaningfully considered the defendant's mitigating circumstances?
We did, Your Honor, and it was the subject of considerable debate and discussion.
So it has to go
it's a difficult
back,
case.
It?
Pardon me?
It has to go back.
Well, the case presents an interesting situation. On one hand, the district court was definitely obligated to explain the sentence in light of 3553A factors, and the district court really didn't do that here. On the other hand, it's interesting to note that the principal arguments raised by the defendant are arguments that this court has identified as arguments that don't require discussion at all. Principal arguments.
So that's what has me thinking. I'm not that worried about the fact that some of the information before the district court was hearsay, because the government would faint if we started to say that hearsay evidence wasn't acceptable in sentencing hearings. So that's, you know, you take it for what it's worth, and we're all fine with that. I understand your argument to be kind of the incredible shrinking explanation, that once it shrinks down to zero, even if particular arguments that the guideline level overstates culpability or something, you can't wind up with absolutely nothing, which is what we have here. All we have is the district court listening and then saying, I'm giving you a guideline sentence. Is that a fair characterization?
I think so, Your Honor. And to be clear, the argument that was raised by the defendant here is not an argument directed to the calculation of the sentencing guidelines range.
The range is right, but it's too much for this particular person's conduct.
I think that's the only proper argument to be made here.
Right.
As this court has made clear, the district court is not free to miscalculate the guidelines, but merely to exercise discretion if it chooses to do so to deviate from the guideline range.
Why don't you want it to go back so that we have a complete record.
I think you're responding very appropriately to an inadvertent ambiguity in the brief. We do want it to go back. We are conceding that it should go back.
Yeah, okay.
Your Honor, it's fair for you to take that because our prayer for relief did not state that correctly. No, you're absolutely right about that, and that was the first thing that I meant to say. But we do think it should go back. We're reluctant to ask for it because we do think that the record does indicate that the court listened very carefully to the arguments made by the defendant. The district judge asked questions.
How can you know if a district court is listening?
Here's my evidence. The district court asked specific questions with respect to both of the principal arguments that the defendant made. Specifically, or rather, the family circumstances was a big emphasis for the court.
She was interested in the family.
That's right. And she asked specific questions about his marital status and whether he had children, and she asked the defendant, our defense counsel, to identify the family members who had come to court to support the defendant.
Of course, that just means she didn't read the pre-sentence report, or she would have known whether he was married and had children.
I wouldn't say that, Your Honor, but I do think that she took an interest in the family circumstances and tried to confirm that her understanding of the situation was correct. And with respect to the gun, she asked specifically, was the gun recovered? I mean, she was obviously taking in, considering the arguments that were presented by the parties. But at the same time, as Judge Wood, you've pointed out, when it came time to impose sentence, she merely spoke to the imposition. She just identified the sentence she was imposing and didn't go any further. And unfortunately, under the applicable case law, we just don't think that's enough. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, you both want the same thing. Do you have anything else to add?
I can say it so it's in the record. This is wonderful. This I haven't heard before.
Your Honor, we really do thank the government for its honest assessment and for its support of the remand, Your Honor. I think that it is important, as I said before, not only for creating the record for review, but also for creating the perception of fair sentencing. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.